Thanks again, everyone, for coming. And, man, it's been a great conference. Well, here's where you can get a hold of me. I've got a blog. It's called What's Best Next. Focuses on productivity in work, life, business, and society. And I touch on economics in there off and on, which is relevant to our subject today. Facebook, I'm on there. Twitter, on there. There's my email address. If you want to email me, just don't write anything too long. So here's what I want to do. First introduction, then I'll tell you where I'm going. Okay, so the gospel and money. I had a hard time figuring out, wow, how do I cover this subject? It's bigger than me. Going to do my best here. Main point. The gospel frees us from the temptation to think simplistically about money. Now, why does this matter? Because we are here to serve. Our goal in life should be to make life better for others to the glory of God. These are the two great commandments. Love God, love your neighbor as yourself. Now, how great it would be if Christians were actually known for that. And I don't want to... That's not the best way for me to put it. We're not as known for those things as we ought to be. And wouldn't it be great if we were manifestly known as the people who are in this world not for themselves, but for others, fulfilling the image of God as outpourer. Selfishness is unnatural. What's natural is to be giving and to exist for the sake of others to the glory of God. If we do that, we're following the example, first of all, of our Lord. This is a fantastic passage. The Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. Now, I love that because it captures exactly what we are to be about. And Christ himself, who had every right to be served, said, no, I'm here to serve. Now, a couple years ago in our newspaper, I live in Minneapolis, in the Minneapolis Star Trib, there was a big article on some local church which held to a variation of the health, wealth, and prosperity teaching. And in there was a section about one of the pastors in that movement was at Perkins or somewhere, and his pancakes came out cold. And he said to the waiter or the waitress, he said, the king doesn't want his children to have cold pancakes. Yes, he does. Sometimes he does. Here's what he wants more from his children, to be nice to that waitress. Don't make a big deal about the cold pancakes. Just eat them. There's more important things to do. Or for some reason it's really important to you, be nice about it. Don't be a jerk. That's the wrong attitude. That attitude, God doesn't want his children to have cold pancakes, manifests the thinking that we are here to be served, that waitress is there to serve us. She's not, even though she's a waitress. I think that's the meaning of the word, actually, serve. Anyway, that's what waitresses do. But even when you're in a restaurant, you're not there to be served. You're there to serve. How do you be in that restaurant in a way that serves even those who are there to serve you? So we are to be all about serving, and that follows the example of Jesus. And then it glorifies God. Jesus also said, let your light so shine before others that they would see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. So the result is glory of God. Where's our joy in this? Here's where it is, in those two things, serving others and glorifying God. So I'm not saying your joy doesn't matter. I'm saying find it in the right place. And it's in your joy is in being focused on others to the glory of God. That's where our joy is. So as Christians, we are to be God-centered, outward-looking. Our aim is to serve. And so my aim is to help enable you do maximum good for others and the world so that the reputation of Christ can be restored more fully. As a giving, generous God, I want the world to know that Christ is that way by looking at us and seeing that we are that way. And here's the thing. Good intentions are not enough. Serving requires wisdom. So we can have these great intentions, but still go about it completely wrong. N.T. Wright, great example. I'm sorry to bring that up. But I love how he talks about the need for us to be addressing global issues, issues like poverty and so forth. He gets it entirely wrong in how we should do that. And he's a very smart guy. But that's one example of how it's not enough simply to exhort Christians and the church to address these issues and concern about these issues, we got to know how to do it right so that we actually help, because we're not doing this for ourselves. We're not doing it to feel better. And this is, I'm going to get into this when I talk about money, why we actually have to have a positive view of money, because if you don't, a lot of times you end up doing good for your own sake to alleviate your guilt. That's selfish. That's not other-centered. We need to serve not to alleviate our guilt over affluence. We shouldn't have guilt over affluence. We should serve others because it benefits them and serves them. So we got to get rid of this notion of I'm guilty because I have so much. And we see this a lot in the stars. I get sick of hearing about Angelina Jolie. I get sick of that. And I wonder, you don't know how people are motivated and so forth, but I wonder how much of this in the celebrity culture that is trying to do good for the world and so forth is motivated by they feel guilty for having so much. I know that exists. I would never be in a position to know who is doing it that way, but I know that's a significant temptation. Let's not be that. And by the way, let's see Jesus get the glory for helping Africa, not Angelina Jolie. Good grief. Okay. So here's the problem. We do some simplistic things with money that seem spiritual, but actually get in the way of helping people. We often settle for stage one thinking on money to the detriment of the world. So if we cared about the poor more and we were smart about it, Jesus would get the glory for helping Africa, not Angelina Jolie. Now, money's not the only area where we do stupid things, limited by stage one thinking. There's a shirt I came across in a truck stop. Facebook, and this is, I guess, a form of evangelism. It's only $14.99, by the way. Jesus wants to put you in his book. Do you accept? Yeah. Okay, so we're here to serve and glorify God, and that is our joy. And in order to serve effectively, we need to be smart. But the impression I get is that the only way to glorify God with our money is to give it away. And that's just not true. It can't be true, because we have to do all sorts of other things with our money other than give it away. I'm going to talk about that. And then one exhortation. Three questions, one exhortation. We need to be creative, competent, and audacious in our endeavors to serve the global poor. Audacious. Think big. Angelina Jolie is thinking big, and she doesn't even believe in God. What did she say? Something like, that's good for other people. I hope he exists for other people. I don't need him. Well, so she's doing that without God. And we are God's servants. Instead of demanding warm pancakes, let's request big things of God, to do remarkable initiatives for the good of the world on a large scale so that he will be glorified. So, issue number one, prosperity. How do we understand prosperity in light of the biblical texts that seem to be against money? Okay, two tensions here. Number one, human prosperity is good. The scriptures teach that. Prosperity is good. Number one, how do we know this? Okay, the Garden of Eden, abundant, no scarcity there. Number two, the new heavens and the new earth, no more poverty, abundance. We will be flourishing in all ways, including material ways, in the new heavens and new earth. So material prosperity can't be a bad thing. And it is, by the way, a new heavens and new earth. Very physical, holistic. I like how N.T. Wright hits that point really hard. The problem is he does it as though he thinks no one knew that before. That's been very central to the thinking of the church for millennia. Okay, number three, how do we know this? The Old Testament feasts, even one of the tithes every 3 years or something like that, was to be spent, sorry, Mike, was to be spent on do whatever you want with this. Have a feast, enjoy it. Abundance. Abundance is a good thing. Okay. And then Jesus himself came eating and drinking and was accused of being a glutton and a drunkard. So he was not an ascetic. And then Paul says, God richly furnishes us with all things to enjoy in 1 Timothy 6:17. Okay. Human prosperity is good. It's not bad. But many passages seem to take a wealth-negative view. And the last thing I want to do is explain those away, which you see happen all sorts of time, all the time. You know, in the Timothy passage where, the love of money is the root of all evil. And a lot of people say that they go there and they're like, that looks bad. Oh, but it's the love of money that's the root of all evil. And then they move on. And so that means we don't have to worry about that text anymore. Yeah, because certainly we don't love money, so we don't got to worry about that text. And it almost minimizes the biblical warnings. Oh, it's just the love of money that is the root of all evil. So, yeah, we don't need to wrestle with the difficult issue of money because it's just the love of money. And you know what? That's important. That they're getting at something there, except the problem is they just stop there and don't wrestle with the text. And I think there's something profound if we put these texts in tension. So here's a wealth negative view or wealth negative passage or what seems so. Luke 18. Sell all that you have and distribute to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then how difficult it is for those who have wealth to enter the kingdom of God. Okay. 1 Timothy 6:5-10. If we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. Wow. Wow. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare. And then the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. So how do these fit together? How do these fit together? Here's my solution. We were created and redeemed to enjoy prosperity in all forms, including material prosperity. Therefore, we are free to enjoy it without guilt. However, material prosperity is priority B. We enjoy it without absolutizing it. Priority B might not even be the best way to put it. Maybe the way to put it is it's not a priority. It's good, but it's not a priority. Okay, that's what I think these texts are getting at. The wealth negative perspective is against absolutizing money. And this is where Keller is so helpful and is so applicable here to this issue of money. The problem is when you take a relative good and turn it into an absolute good, which is idolatry. And see, by the way, money's not the only thing the scripture treats in this way. It treats everything in this way. It treats family this way. He who does not hate father and mother is not worthy of me. It treats your own lives this way. It treats your very self this way. If anyone will come after me, let him deny himself. So the way the scriptures treat money is no different than the way it treats everything else. I think that's a crucial thing to realize. Money's not in this special category. The scriptures are looking at it the same way they look at everything else. He who loses his life is the one who saves it. In other words, to use Keller, if you treat your life as an absolute, you'll lose it. If you treat your family as an absolute, you're dead. If you treat money as an absolute, you're gone. That doesn't mean these things are bad as relatives. As relative goods, however. So here's the thing. Scripture affirms the goodness of material prosperity as a relative good, not as an absolute good. That's the solution. And you can do the same. Therefore, you don't have to feel guilty. Going out for a great steak tonight. Can't wait for it. No guilt. I'm going to love it. It might be $40. I don't know. I don't have any guilt about that. I rejoice in that. I'm thankful for it. I think God would be dishonored if I felt guilty about it. However, that is within the context, though, of two very important things. Number one, humility. And number two, grief over the fact that many in the world can't do that and are struggling on a dollar a day or $5 a day or whatever it is. You have to have that grief. You cannot be elusive or aloof to the needs of the world. And that is going to affect some spending decisions. It's like, I wouldn't go do that every night. So that does affect things. And this is what we see in Amos. Compare David and Amos. David is wealthy and was never rebuked for it. And Amos, he rails against the people for eating and drinking. What's going on? Because they did it as those who do not grieve over the ruin of Israel. That was the issue there. They didn't have this grieving. It was all about them. It was they weren't doing it, enjoying it as a relative good. Okay, so enjoy it, receive it with thanksgiving, but do not love money. This is Alcatraz. there. Whereas I went recently. I love going when I love doing interesting things whenever I can as part of this theology, because I think it glorifies God. There are some other texts which really make this clear and say exactly what I'm saying, and I think resolve this tension. Jesus, Matthew 6:33, but seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. This is exactly what he's saying. He's saying, don't seek money first. He's not saying it doesn't matter because they will be added to you, but don't seek it first. That's it. If you seek it first, you're a lover of money. You're absolutizing it. You fall under the condemnation of the earlier texts in Luke and all over the place, which we could go to. Interesting. Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You guys heard of that? And the bottom rung is basic needs, physical needs. And then the top rung is self-actualization, performing at your peak potential. And what's really interesting these days is a lot of people are concerned about that. And what's also really interesting is that Maslow revised his hierarchy of needs towards the end of his life and added another level. He said self-transcendence is not, or self-actualization is not enough. That's not other focused, right? He realized that's the problem because that's about you. And it's good, but it's not enough. So he added the level of self-transcendence, living for a cause greater than yourself. And he says that's the highest need, which I think is fantastic. And I see that going on. I see our prosperity as a nation leading people to want to aspire to that, to live for a cause greater than themselves, because they see that prosperity does not fulfill them. That's one of the reasons I'm concerned about the recession. This recession bothers me immensely because, number one, I care about people, and how the economy does affects massively the welfare of others. But second, I'm concerned it's going to derail our nation from finally seeing we should be about other things, things greater than ourselves, which our prosperity was helping us to see. Now, here's the interesting thing, though. So Maslow revised his hierarchy of needs towards the end of his life. Jesus reversed it because Maslow said that your basic needs are at the bottom. They're first. And unless you have those fulfilled, you can't go to the higher level, which is security, love, and then up to self-actualization, transcendence. Jesus said, no, the bottom of that hierarchy is not your physical needs. He said, don't worry about those things. Seek first his kingdom. That's self-transcendence there. That's the top of Maslow's revised hierarchy. And the transcendent thing we seek, the cause greater than ourselves we pursue, is his kingdom. So Jesus flips it around. You do that first. And then guess what? That bottom rung of the hierarchy of needs, the basic needs, which Maslow thought was foundational, then that will come. But if you make that foundational, you're an idolater because you're absolutizing money. Other texts, not a lover of money. Someone was in love with the present world. Can't remember right now. I'm distracted. 2 Timothy, lovers of self, lovers of money, not loving good. This is wonderful from the book Godly Materialism. This is a good book. If you read Alcorn's book, read this one first. He says, riches are evil on the conditions that people make them absolute ends of life, and especially when they become an altar on which to sacrifice to the poor. When that happens, it is better to remain poor than rich. For when people are rich in that evil manner, God will inevitably destroy them. And it is better to be patient and to endure like the prophets and like Job. But none of this implies that James denies, he's talking about James, the possibility of goodness of riches in a context of faith and righteous action. This makes money more meaningful, makes it meaningful in the right way. Like C.S. Lewis said, you can't get second things by putting them first. You can get second things only by putting first things first. So if we fear, oh, we can't enjoy material prosperity if we don't absolutize it and make it priority A. Well, actually, if you make it priority A, you won't enjoy it. But if you make it priority B, you will. The problem is not that our desires are too strong, by the way. They're too weak. We're like this kind of bird. Is that a pelican? It's near Alcatraz. We're like this bird wanting to eat a bagel that someone dropped in a parking lot when infinite joy is offered to us if we seek first his kingdom. This is what Paul says in 1 Timothy. As for the rich in this present age, look at this. Charge them not to be arrogant. Sometimes I wish I still had my NAS, my New American Standard. I like some of its translations better than the ESV. Sorry. But charge them not to be haughty, nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly supplies with all things to enjoy. They are to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, thus storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, that they may take hold of that which is life indeed. He's not saying your problem is you want too much happiness. That's not the biblical. It's not the biblical perspective. And it's unfortunate that the world thinks that we believe that as Christians. I mean, no wonder a lot of them don't want anything to do with us, because they think we're these killjoys. In reality, what they need to hear is, look, you guys, your problem is you're too weak in your desires. You're not excited enough about getting fantastic things. Your desires are too weak. That's the problem. There is something better. Jesus is not against investment. He's against bad investment. He's saying, don't settle for that bagel in the parking lot. Go after infinite joy. That's what I have to offer. Piper, Jesus is not against investment. He's against bad investment, namely setting your heart on the comforts and securities that money can afford in this world. Money is to be invested for eternal yields in heaven. Here's what this means. Okay, application. What this all means is, in this world, we will often sacrifice material goods and even welfare. This is glorious. We sacrifice them because they're priority B, or not a priority, not priority A. So we can do without them, because they're not absolute. But we do this not because they are bad, or because it's wrong to have too much, or because we are against joy. We do it because we are after true joy, ultimate, lasting, maximum joy. And on the path to that, there are endeavors of higher importance than money, chief among them becoming like Christ, advancing the work of the Great Commission, and working for the relief of the poor globally. So we sacrifice money for these greater things, which are more important than it. When we're able to enjoy money, we enjoy it without guilt. But we give it up when necessary for the sake of the call. Application. Great quote from Piper from Don't Waste Your Life. That would be the next book I would recommend in relation to money. Piper, Don't Waste Your Life. Because going back to this issue of self-transcendence, living for a cause greater than yourself, this book says exactly what that is. And I wish that millions of unbelievers would read this and see what really is out there. As Christians, we're not about being morose and taking away people's joy. We're about real joy. And that means living for a cause greater than yourself, the kingdom of God. And I forget what I was going to say next. But there's a great quote from Piper here, which I was going to read. I'm running out of time. I'm going to read it anyway. This is my son reading, wearing a Don't Waste Your Life shirt. Here's what Piper says. Oh, that young and old would turn off the television, take a long walk, and dream about feats of courage for a cause 10,000 times more important than American democracy. As precious as that is. Yeah, that is excellent. Piper affirms, look, American democracy is great. It's a good thing. I think that's important, because if we don't acknowledge good things, like in this case, democracy is a good thing, we don't see how much of a better thing the cause of God is in the kingdom. So he can say, democracy is great. There's something better. Awesome. If we would dream and if we would pray, would not God answer? Would he withhold from us a life of joyful love and mercy and sacrifice that magnifies Christ and makes people glad in God? I plead with you as I pray for myself. Set your face like flint to join Jesus on the Calvary road. Let us go outside the camp. Okay, that was that. It's in there. Okay, by the way, riches don't become priority A in heaven. By the way, it's still God. They're still relative in heaven. Okay, so there's the foundation, and I'm just about out of time. So I want to talk about giving, spending something on the poor in 4 minutes here. Okay. So if we want to be smart, we have this context now to how to think of money. So how does that apply to our daily life applications? We have to give. Okay. So we want to be smart, right? Remember? So is maximizing our financial giving always the best way to serve others? And I'm just going to say no. And that is the big missing piece in Alcorn. It's the missing piece. You get the impression, he may not actually believe this, but you get the impression that the What you got to do is maximize your giving in order to maximize your service to God. And it's just not true, because our responsibility is to maximize the total good that we do, the total good. And there's a trade-off between time, money, and energy. And sometimes you need to give less money so you can give more time. And if giving more time is going to result in more good overall, you give less money so you can give more time. Because that's where you're going to have the impact. That may be, given your context and the need of the moment and the circumstance, what you need to be offering to the world. And you won't be able to offer it if you're trying to max out your giving. You can't do everything. And there are three illustrations from life that show this. Okay, number one, in project management, there's a triangle much like this between time, cost, and scope. And what they say is you can do two of these things, but not three. So if you want the project to come in on time, to come in quickly, and you want it to come in cheaply, you can do that, but you can't get everything done. The scope needs to decrease. Or if you got a ton you want to do on it and you want it high quality, it's going to take, or you want to spend a low amount of money, it's going to take a long time. You can't do all three. And it's the same in life. Here's one example, okay? Just an example of this. When I love giving my time and investing any remote talent and skill that I have for the kingdom, doing things that I don't think other people would be doing. And so I just love putting in, I'll put in sometimes, I won't tell you how long, a lot of time doing stuff. And when I have a particular week where I'm putting in a lot of time, I just have to go out to eat a lot. I just have to do it because I cannot both be up to the max in terms of the energy and time I'm devoting to the cause and how I'm handling my money. I cannot maximize the minimization of my expenditures on food when I'm maximizing my time and energy. I don't have the capacity to do that, so I go out to eat a lot. But I don't go to, you know, fancy places. I'll go to Subway, I go wherever. It helps me keep investing my time where it needs to go. Here's another example. Okay, this is a power cord for your Mac. Don't get mad at me. Okay, I have four of these. In order to save my time, these cost money. I spent that money so that I would be able to do more good overall, so that I could make the doing of good easier and more accessible to me. And here's why. Okay, so I travel a lot, so I need one in my bag. And then I have a desk at work, and so I have one there, so I can just plug it right in. And then I have a desk at home, so I have another one there, so I can just plug it right in. And then upstairs in my living room where I do some work, I have another one, so I can plug it in right there. And someone could say, Matt, you could save money by doubling up the one you have in your briefcase with the one in your living room. And just take it out of your briefcase when you're sitting in your living room, which is great. I tried that at first. But here's what I knew would happen. I'd take it out of my briefcase, sit in my living room, powering up my laptop, and I would forget to put it back in my briefcase. So then go on a trip, and I need to use my laptop, and I don't have this with me because I left it at home because I put it in my living room when I was using it, and I didn't want that to happen. So I said, I'm going to spend the money to get another one of these so that doesn't happen, because that would reduce my ability to do good. So none of this, I want warm pancakes. It's not that mentality. It's what is most effective for the cause. And I realize the value of my time and having the resources necessary to use my laptop on a trip is worth spending that extra money, so I don't ever got to take this out of my bag. Just a couple more things. So don't be penny wise and pound foolish. On spending, here's my one point here. Can we glorify God in spending money as well as in giving money? And I just want to say yes. That's my main problem with Alcorn. Don't have a hot potato view of money. This is what Wesley had. Money never stays with me. It would burn me if it did. I throw it out of my hands as soon as possible, lest it should find its way into my heart. Here's why. Here's why that's not a healthy view of money. Just don't. It's great for Wesley. For most of us, don't do it and don't feel guilty for not having that view of money. Here's why. Number one, monetary transactions are good in themselves. They are a way of serving your neighbor. Grudem talks about this in his book, Business to the Glory of God. He says, commercial transactions are in themselves good because through them we do good to other people. This is because of the amazing truth that in most cases, voluntary commercial transactions benefit both parties. Okay, and then also because we can imitate God's attributes each time we buy and sell. if we practice honesty, faithfulness to our commitments, fairness, and freedom of choice. So when we buy and sell, we are imitating God. And that glorifies God in itself. Here's the other reason. In our spending money, we create culture. Andy Crouch says in his book, Culture Making, we change culture by making culture. If all you do is give away your money, now I know some people should do that, but if everybody did that and that's all you did, you're outsourcing the creation of culture to others entirely. Make your house a form of culture. Your house is a form of culture. Do it right. That doesn't mean spend a lot of money, but you're going to be spending some money. You're going to be spending some money. Spending money is a way of creating culture. And so one example of that is my bookshelves in my basement. I have bookshelves down there, so I have a place for all my books so that I can get any book easily, immediately, with quick access, because that enables me to serve more because my books are organized. I didn't say I need to save money on bookshelves, so I'm just going to keep them in boxes, making it mean that's going to take a long time anytime I have to go get a book. So now I can quickly, if I'm blogging or if I'm doing something for work, I can stay focused at the task at hand. I go get the book. I know right where it is because I got these bookshelves, and I can put it back when I'm done. And my whole house is like that. It is organized for optimum efficiency. Everything's right where it is. We don't have junk drawers. I hate junk drawers. We don't have one. We know right where everything is. We can get it quickly, minimal drag, so that we are freed up to invest our time in doing good. And so that we have systems in place, all sorts of simple little things like having these things in the right spot, so that the environment we are in incentivizes and makes natural the doing of good. So we've got our whole house designed that way. And last thing. So see all spending as manifestations of your calling to create culture in all areas. Don't let us down. And global poverty, I've already basically said what I want to say, so I guess I won't go into detail on that. We need to be creative, competent, and audacious in our endeavors to serve the poor. And that would mean, first of all, understand economics. I wish I could talk more on that. But understand economics, and then pioneer new models that work against the policies that create poverty and that bring relief to those who are in poverty. Pioneer new models. And let's see here. Any final thing that I want to say? There's a lot of other things I wanted to say. I wanted to rail against this new box for my hose that I bought and put beside my house and save some money on it. But it was a piece of junk, and it wasted a lot of my time. And then I came across some Proverbs where it said slack work is a close cousin to vandalism. And I thought, that's right. And now I see examples of that everywhere. It's because people are trying to save money, not realizing they're being penny wise and pound foolish. The goal is to maximize the total good that you do. So when this company was making this box for the hose, make it cost a little more so it doesn't waste an hour of my time trying to hook it up, please. And so that doesn't break if it accidentally falls over. Spend the money to do that. That serves. That maximizes total good. Don't diminish the total good you do because you're going to feel more virtuous in the money you save.